Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to Faith Radio Mornings today, Tuesday, June 12th. Great to have you along as we start out the morning together. Get some news and perspective and encouragement along the way. I want to say happy birthday today to former President George H.W. Bush, 94 today. He was the 41st President of the United States. Significant events, of course, with our president and the leader of North Korea had a historic summit yesterday in Singapore. We'll see what transpires as a result of that. Other events on this date in history. Back in 1987, you may remember this, making reference to the wall separating Germany's East and West Berlin. President Reagan challenged Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev to tear down this wall in an impassioned speech in the divided city. And that was a historical turning point. Another note on this date in history, 1964, the South African government sentenced Nelson Mandela to life imprisonment. And thankfully released and made a significant impact in our world and in understanding what it means to be a human being. We'll see what happens as a result of the history making from yesterday in Singapore and where that goes. We're going to talk a little bit about maybe some historic findings in the areas of cancer treatment, a landmark study. We're going to jump into that conversation in a few minutes with Dr. David Stevens. He's a regular guest here in Faith Radio Mornings from the Christian Medical and Dental Association, one of our favorite doctors. I always enjoy talking with him. I went to visit my doctor just the other day, and he's great as well. I appreciate him. And the great thing about my doctor is, if he can't prescribe a cure, he'll touch up your x-rays. So, all right, we're going to take a little break and come back with Dr. David Stevens just ahead.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of years without crying.
Good morning. It's 8 past the hour, and that's the walk-up music for Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. He's a regular on the morning show and one of our favorites. Dr. Stevens, welcome back. Good to talk with you this morning.
Good to hear your voice, Neil, and it's good to have my own song.
Yes.
I heard it again.
Yeah, I don't know if it's, it's the best song. I guess I went to the doctor the other day, actually, for my annual checkup physical, which I do probably every 4 or 5 years or so. And I do kind of want to start there. My doctor we were chatting, and he said he's thinking about retirement. And I thought, I don't want my doctor to retire. That's a reality for many people, though, isn't it?
It is. It is. And unfortunately, more of it happening in medicine because increasing bureaucracy, docs are getting out of medicine earlier than they used to, just tired of the dealing with insurance companies and electronic medical records and all the things that interfere with them and having a relationship with their patient. But the other part of it, too, is just a long grind as a physician. You're extremely busy for your whole life.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful for mine, and I know that somehow I'll adjust, right? Finding a new one, that's maybe at some point we should talk about how do you find a good doctor.
Yeah, that would be a good way to do it. And people, if they're looking for a good Christian doctor, they can actually go on our website at cmda.org and put in their zip code and what kind of doctor they're looking for. And it'll tell you Christian doctors in your area that you may want to go make your own.
I like that, cmda.org. Well, David, I want to talk about a couple of new studies and some research. One of the areas that is a research study came out not too long ago about chemotherapy and breast cancer, that maybe they can skip chemotherapy, and that would be certainly wonderful news for lots of women.
Yeah, it would be. And my wife's had breast cancer, so if this study had been in place, she probably would not have had chemo. We're moving into what we call personalized medicine. In other words, your medical treatment is going to be more and more based upon your genetic makeup. And with breast cancer, we've had kind of a scan we do of 21 specific genes called Oncotype. And it gives you a score between 0 and 100, and we've known that if it's under 10, a woman doesn't need chemotherapy. She may just have a excisional biopsy and hormonal therapy. And above 25, we know it's going to be pretty aggressive, and we need to give chemotherapy and radiation and surgery, all three of them together because of the high score. But the problem's been, Neil, what do we do with those people in between 10 and 25? And that's actually about 69% of women, when they're diagnosed, fall in that gray area of what to do about their cancer. And many of them have opted to go ahead with chemotherapy. Well, a large study was done, over 10,000 women, a 10-year study. And one of my board members is a breast cancer expert and was part of this study. I was just talking to him Friday night about it. And it was a big changer in healthcare. And what they found out, they took the women that fell in the middle, and half of them they gave chemotherapy to and half of them they did not, and found out there was no difference after 10 years in their survival rate, their recurrence of cancer, and all that type of thing. So what this means is that they really don't need chemotherapy, and that's huge. Chemotherapy is the most difficult part of treatment in breast cancer, and your hair falls out, and you feel terrible, and your immune system drops, and you're nauseated, and, you know, all sorts of things. And if you have to do it to save your life, sure, do it. But now there's going to be probably about 70,000 women a year that fall into this gray area now know they don't need chemotherapy. They'll do well without it.
That has got to be good news for those that, you know, face that diagnosis. But, I mean, it's how do we are there some ways that we can decide? Is it simply a matter of what insurance will cover? Does that make the determination?
No, actually, this test, this Oncotype diagnostic test of genes, is about $4,000. It's a lot cheaper than chemotherapy, and it's pretty routine now, and insurance companies pay for it. And so this is not only good news for women, but it's also good news for healthcare costs in our country, because chemotherapy goes on over time. There's lots of testing that has to be done, and it's expensive. But the good news is, and you know, there's certain people, it's people that are hormone receptive positive. It means their breast cancer responds to hormone blockers, which is another way that we treat cancer. And they don't have what we call HER2 negative breast cancer, which is a very HER2 is a marker that makes it very aggressive. So they have to have that negative test. But the vast majority of women, their breast cancer is found quite early, and they fall into this category. And now we're going to have to do a lot less for them and not put them through the agony of chemo.
Well, thankfully, I guess over the years, even the chemo has become much more advanced, right? So, I mean, treatments are, thankfully, research is bringing us better and better options, right, as we go along, no matter what stage or level of treatment we might need.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting things happening in cancer, and death rates have really dropped in a lot of cancers. And one of the other things that's going on is immunotherapy, and where they're actually sensitizing your own immune system to attack the cancer. That's probably the easiest way to explain it. And so they augment that and sometimes even take cells from your bodies, genetically modify some of the immune cells to go back and actually attack that cancer or part of something that's a part of the cancer and destroy it. And so we're getting a lot of advances in cancer treatment across the country, which we can be very thankful for as we get more insight into the genetics and more insight into what we call personalized medicine. And before, if you had a cancer this big and there was, you know, so much cancer in your lymph nodes as a woman with breast cancer, then you got this therapy. If it had gone further and it was, you know, on your chest wall, you got this therapy. Now they're actually not only looking at that, but looking at the genetic makeup of you as an individual and tailoring your therapy based on that. If you have a score over 25 in this Oncotype test, then it's going to be aggressive cancer, and they know they got to pull out all the stops. So they're making sure you get the treatment you need and don't get the treatments you don't need, and that's highly good for people with cancer.
Some good news, this landmark study, and as we've talked a little bit about more personalized medicine and more. By the way, we're going to talk more about some new treatments and the studies in the area of infertility coming up in a moment. Dr. David Stevens with us. He's a regular part of the Faith Radio Mornings, and we're honored to have him with us. As always, it's 15 past the hour, and we'll talk more with David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association in just a moment. Eighteen past the hour. Dr. David Stevens with us from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. A great resource for you as you're pursuing things medical. CMDA.org is the website. I always love talking to Dr. Stevens about what's happening in terms of studies and personalized medicine and immunotherapy. One of the new therapies or areas that's advancing is in the area of technology dealing with infertility. There's some new approaches there. David, let's talk a little bit about what's happening on this important forefront.
Well, you know, infertility is a huge problem in the United States. About one out of eight couples deal with it. And, you know, God has designed families for children, but you don't have to have children. It doesn't diminish the fullness of the family. And some people never have children. And there's options such as adoption, and I think that very much mirrors what God does, adopting us into his family as we come to faith in him, and we always want to promote that. And then some people want to say, well, can you as a physician, an infertility specialist, help me with our infertility problem? And there's some good options there, but it's also a minefield, and by that I mean you've really got to understand what you're getting into before you get into it. And that's why I always recommend getting a Christian infertility specialist to help you walk through that. And people can go on our website, too. We have position papers, and some of those are on reproductive technology. What should you do and what should you not do? And the routine things are you're trying to see if there's anatomic problems, disease problems, hormonal problems. The doctor takes you through multiple steps of studying to see if the fallopian tubes, the tubes coming out of the uterus, are blocked. Then maybe surgery can solve that. Or if you're not, a woman is not ovulating, it's not producing an egg every month, then there's medicines we can give to help stimulate that. Or perhaps she gets pregnant and loses the pregnancy, and maybe some hormonal supplementation will do that. The thing where it gets more controversial and people have different opinions on it is in vitro fertilization. In vitro fertilization, Neil, means taking the husband's sperm and the wife's egg and actually having fertilization take place in the lab, and then implanting the embryo in the womb. And sometimes that's the only option for pregnancy after you've exhausted all these other areas. And there's been some moral issues there. We have a very clear understanding of how to proceed in that, and that you do not create more embryos than you're willing and going to give an opportunity to develop in your womb. That barrier there, because what happens, let me explain, and what happens is that the doctor actually causes the woman to make a lot of eggs in 1 month through hormonal stimulation, harvests those, and in the past, the only way you could keep those eggs alive was to fertilize them, and then you end up with 10 embryos, and they may implant two and freeze the rest, and there are probably, Neil, half a million or more embryos in frozen storage in this country. That's an ethical dilemma.
Wow, that's, you know, and when it comes to bioethics and in medicine, we see that that slope is pretty slippery, it seems like, all the time.
It is, and it's kind of like, well, these aren't persons, but, you know, we have custody battles over embryos after couples break up, all sorts of things going on. The good news is that now we're able to freeze eggs. In the past, we couldn't do that. They have a lot of water in them. The water crystallized. The eggs were destroyed. So the only way to preserve them and not have to go through the whole stimulation procedure and egg harvesting, which is a surgical procedure, was to keep the embryos and in frozen storage. And now we can actually freeze the egg, which is not a person, and actually do the fertilization when they're ready to do the implantation. The success rate of in vitro fertilization after everything else has been tried is around 30%, some places up as high as 40% success rate. And that may be one or two or three attempts. It's expensive. It costs $15,000 an attempt, and sometimes insurance companies don't pay for it. So, you know, first you go through the easy steps and trying to find the reasons for this. And then there may be situations where God just is not going to let you have children, and accepting that or adopting children is the other options out there. So this is an agonizing for people, and there's a lot of psychological and spiritual support that's needed through this process as well.
David Stevens with the Christian Medical and Dental Association. As you said, in this area, reproductive technology, a minefield. You can get resources online at cmda.org. We've got a couple minutes left, and interested in your reaction to the Supreme Court's decision ruling in favor of Jack Phillips of Masterpiece Cake Shop. Will that have impact for the medical profession?
Actually, we submitted an amicus curiae brief on it because if they had ruled the other way, it would have grave impact on us. The biggest issue for our members, Neil, is right of conscience. And there's more and more pressure to force doctors to do things that they believe are immoral and unbiblical, and being punished if they won't. One of my members lost his position in a major medical school because he didn't believe in transgender transitions and actually said it was bad science, spoke at a meeting, and came back, and they stripped him of all his positions on the campus. So this is a real issue for our members, and this case is going to have impact on all of us, because can the government force you to give speech or to attend event or say something that you disagree with? And that's what happened in the Masterpiece case. He was going to give any cake in the shop to them, but they wanted him to design one, lauding same-sex marriage, which was against his biblical beliefs. And the lot of hostility in Colorado towards him when they made their decision there, and the Supreme Court overruled it. And it's going to have an impact on the whole country. It doesn't solve the whole problem. We need better legislation, broader protections, but it was a great step in the right direction.
Well, certainly, I think we can at the very least expect that hostility will grow in a variety of ways, right, in a variety of fields, it seems, over the years to come.
It will be, and a lot of the targets because of the ethical issues are in the medical field, but these things affect – if they can force me to do something as a healthcare professional with the respect that healthcare professionals have in our society, they can force anybody to do anything. And so this affects, you know, florists, cake decorators, and everybody ultimately. And what happens is people say, let us do this. And then these groups come back and want to force you to endorse it and participate in it so they can say, yes, it's okay. And we have to draw the line somewhere. And that's what happened in this case.
Well, thanks for filing that brief and for the way that you advocate on behalf of freedom, certainly of right of conscience for doctors and their patients. It's a key area. You can find out more of the good work of Christian Medical and Dental Association on their website, cmda.org. Dr. David Stevens with us this morning. David, always good to talk with you. Blessings in your day.
Thanks so much, Neil.
All right, it's 26 past the hour. Faith Radio Morning's underway. Speaking of religious freedom, we'll talk about some threats to religious freedom coming up in a minute on Breakpoint. Eric Metaxas has that just ahead. Thirty-one past the hour here on a Tuesday morning. Faith Radio Morning's underway. I'm Neil Stabem. And coming up in about 10 minutes, George Yancey, professor of sociology at the University of North Texas, authored a number of books on racism and anti-religious hostility. Has a new one coming out called Prejudice in the Press. We'll talk about that, as well as the Southern Baptist National Convention meeting and some of the challenges they're facing and working through. Also, Mark Gregston has a thought on patience. You'll have to wait for that, though. That'll come up in about 6 minutes here on Faith Radio Morning. 24 minutes before the top of the hour, talking about reconciled relationships. And if we could look ahead, play the tape forward, and see what kind of impact our decisions would make now, there would be a lot less brokenness and hurt families. So we're talking hope for hurt families in the moment ahead with Jackson Dunn. Jackson is from Focus on the Family, and he's talking about foolish decisions. Jackson encourages people to consider the consequences of their actions before those actions take place, particularly as it relates to the possibility of an affair.
People get so single-minded and, well, it won't hurt anyone, or, oh, it's just this thing over here, or it's not going to, you know what, my kids do want me to be happy, they want me to be loved. I think we've got to be so fooled to make such a foolish decision that we have no concept for those around us. And I think if that doesn't show you how selfish that you're being, to not even be able to understand or show any empathy or concern for those that, quote, mean the most to you, how deceived are we? How selfish are we being? That, to me, it reveals so much of our heart. And if we're trying to figure out if that's a good decision, and the only pros we can put on there are lie after lie after terrible after selfish after, what is there to decide?
Jackson Dunn offering some hope for broken families. You can hear that full conversation by going to myfaithradio.com and then doing a search for children and divorce. And it'll be an encouragement to you, and pass it on to a friend. So all the podcasts shareable at myfaithradio.com. 37 past the hour, and coming up in a moment, George Yancey. George is a sociologist and an author, and is going to talk to us about the Southern Baptists and more, all coming up.
Are you a patient person? Does your temper flare when the line is too long at the bank? Are you one of those drivers who pounds the steering wheel when there's traffic? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Patience while waiting online or on the highway is one thing, but it's never more needed than when parenting teens. I say it's the most important test of your competence as a mom or dad. Your teen will make mistakes. He'll forget his responsibilities or make a fool of himself in conversation, but it's just one more moment to take a deep breath and choose to love him anyway. We need to be patient, just as God is patient with us. He's at work in your life and mine, and we need to pass along the same kind of grace and mercy to our teens.
There's much more encouragement for parents from Mark Gregston online at ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
God
before the hour on a Tuesday morning. George Yancey is my guest. Next few minutes, George is professor of sociology at the University of North Texas, author of some 15 books focusing on racism and anti-religious hostility. And George is also heading to the Southern Baptist National Convention. We wanted to talk about that and a new book he's got coming out. George, welcome back to Faith Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, George, I know you're going to be at the Southern Baptist National Convention. That's always, it seems like, an interesting news time, maybe this year much more so than in the past. Give us a little update on what you'll be expecting to see.
Well, you know, I think we're going to see a major change in the leadership of the Southern Baptists if the vote goes the way that I think a lot of people expect it to go. You know, in the past, Southern Baptist has been a denomination that, you know, conservative denomination, conservative theologically, and it only makes sense because we're theologically. But I think it's been tied to the Republican Party so much that identifies exactly with the Republican Party, and I think that's been detrimental to them. And I think we're going to see a change away from that, you know, a party that can be more attractive to people of color, to the young. And I think it is a needed change, while recognizing and appreciating what people have done in the past. to know that it's time for us to move forward into the sort of future we have.
You know, looking to attract people of color and the young, you ended up kind of circling back to the Southern Baptists. Talk a little bit about your journey and maybe what attracted you back to that denomination.
Yeah, I mean, I was discipled by the Southern Baptists. I became a Christian at 19, discipled by the Southern Baptists, very appreciative. And, you know, I was in the middle of a church split, which sort of disaffected me from them. And I just sort of drifted away and joined a lot of non-denominationals and other churches in the meantime. And then I found a wonderful church here in Denton, the Village Denton, a wonderful church that, the church attracted me. I mean, the denomination didn't necessarily, the church attracted me because they're forward-looking and they were dealing with some of these issues, attracting the young people of color, some of these issues that I think are very important that have to be dealt with. And so I enjoyed that church. I became a Southern Baptist. And once I became a Southern Baptist, through that means I wanted to, give my talents, my skills, my giftings to the denomination. So I identify right now as Southern Baptist. I'm very hopeful for today that we can make a transition. I think a lot of denominations have to think about making this transition, and I hope that we can make it smoothly.
You know, there's, Christianity, maybe across the spectrum in the United States, has not always handled relationships well between husband and wife, men and women, understanding that. You've studied a number of things as a sociologist, but is this an area that we're starting to make some progress on?
Well, I would hope so. I think it begins by recognizing that we have had a problem. And by the way, this problem has been across our society, the way women have been treated, treated by men in power. And I suspect that it's happened less among Christians than among serious Christians, among others. I think there's some research that suggests that. But it still has happened, and it's not acceptable, and we have to move away from that. And we have to find places for our sisters to serve and give them full support, just like we would give our brothers. And I think that I'm very hopeful from some of what I've heard from some of the individuals who may be going in leadership that this is going to be the direction they're going to go. And we can have an expression to the rest of society, but we have to be very mindful of our own shortcomings. And this has been a shortcoming.
You're also going to be there, part of a panel talking about maybe racial issues and concerns. Where do you see the church moving in this area, and what still needs to be done?
Well, I'll discuss this on the panel and go more a little bit in depth. But I think we as Christians have something unique to offer on race that we're not offering. Our understanding of human depravity and our need to have real human communications with one another, not just talk past each other. I think we need to work towards that, and I hope tonight to encourage my fellow Southern Baptists to really work on that. It's hard work. I mean, it was easy. It was already done. But I'm hoping that we can start working towards being a model of racial reconciliation, and rather than just doing what other people around the world are doing, what the rest of our society is doing, and imitating them, that we will chart a new path that they will begin to imitate us, and we become leaders in this area rather than followers.
George Yancey is professor of sociology, University of Texas, University of North Texas, I should say. He's author of a number of books focusing on racism and anti-religious hostility. We'll talk about a new book that George has written. It's coming out here soon as we talk more about race and bias and some of those things. Prejudice in the press. We'll get to that in the moments ahead here. It's a quarter to the hour. Seven past the hour. George Yancey, professor of sociology at the University of North Texas and author of some 15 books, is my guest. George has done a lot of research and study after his doctorate in sociology back in the mid-90s. And I know one of the areas we're going to talk about, your new upcoming book, but one of the first areas of study you worked on was a study of multiracial churches. And I'm just wondering, George, what are some of the characteristics of those churches that show the rest of us how relationships could be done?
Well, yeah, a lot of times what those churches do, of course not all of them, a lot of times they're very inclusive with their leadership. So they make sure that people of different races have a voice in the leadership. I think that's very important. And you see it in the way they do worship. Their worship styles tend to be much more inclusive, the way they decorate their churches. You see the way they adopt to cultural norms and values of other people. You really, when you have a multiracial church, you really learn what is scriptural and what is cultural. Because if it's merely cultural, you'll have other Christians going, well, you know, what's wrong with this? You know, this is not unbiblical, and churches begin to adapt to that. Too oftentimes, when our churches are only most of one race, we tend to think that our racial group's culture is biblical, when it's not. You know, biblical is biblical, our cultural is cultural. And so those are some of the adjustments that they make. They tend to be very adaptable, very ready to adapt to the new challenges that are there. So we are seeing more multiracial churches, fortunately, in the body of Christ that has grown over the past 10, 15 years since I first started studying them. We need more. There's no doubt about that. But we are seeing more and more people taking on this challenge and more individuals in our society, especially younger folks. They want to be in multiracial settings. They don't want to go to church with just people of their own race. So this is one of the ways we're going to have to adapt if we're going to thrive into the future.
And kind of gets back to our earlier conversation about, you know, the as denominations meet, there's always that challenge between the existing leadership and the new directions that could be coming with the younger leadership.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess that's always around. This just seems to be a moment in time where it's necessary for the Southern Baptists to make this change. There's been a build up of the young movement. I think we've seen some of the problems that doing things the old way is producing. Even though it's produced a lot of good things, it's also produced some externalities that we have to address. So this just seems like this is the time. I mean, you know, maybe it could have happened a few years earlier, but this seems like the right time for the Southern Baptists to begin to make a new change. And especially right now with all the controversy, you know, we need a Southern Baptist to change the conversation away from the Me Too-ism. Not that we have to ignore that, but we need to be talking about more than just that. And that's all the media is talking about us right now. And so I'm hoping that a lot of others are about to see that this is the time for that change.
Yeah, you've got time to talk a little bit about your new upcoming book called Prejudice in the Press. You've been investigating, you know, bias for some time. So say a bit about this new focus on media bias. We assume that it's real, but are there some documented cases?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, when I did my stuff on academic bias, you know, and Christianophobia, I realized that I wanted to look at other institutions where I think that there might have been Christianophobia, there might have been bias. And the media, given who tends to have Christianophobia, progressives, well-educated, white, wealthy, this would be one of the areas. And so what I and my colleague did was we did a survey. We did what's called an audit survey, where we gave people scenarios, and then we switched out a characteristic in the survey, in the scenario, to see if they would react differently as to how they would report the story. And what we found is, and we chose a variety of things. I'll concentrate on our findings with Christians. What we found is it really doesn't matter as far as the sort of story that's going to be told when you're talking about a Christian as opposed to, say, someone from the LGBT community or a Muslim, that it really doesn't matter. There's less sympathy as far as the interests of Christians as opposed to those in those other communities. For example, one scenario we had was about hate speech by a professor. And we changed the scenario to where one scenario is someone who is being homophobic and another scenario that someone's being Christianophobic. And when they were given the homophobic one, then there was all the talks about hate speech and, you know, how does tennis persecute their job? with the Christianophobia one, there was, you know, discomfort about the speech, but there's also a lot of talk about free speech and that we can't shut down free speech. And so I think that shows you, even though they're going to cover both stories, the way they're going to tell the stories is going to be different. I think that's kind of what we're seeing in the press. There has been other research on this. I think that our findings is unique in that we really look at the religious aspect, and the audit experiment, I think, is something that's an advancement in this sort of research.
Yes, we always, I mean, everybody has a bias, I guess, but we'd like journalists to have objective standards of reporting. Maybe that's too much to hope for?
Well, you know, we could aim for that. And I'm hopeful, you know, I mean, this book is an academic book, so it's not a polemic book. I'm not trying to be a David Horowitz or anything like that. I don't want to be that. And I'm hopeful that media individuals can read this book and go, okay, we have this bias. What can we do to lessen the bias or even get rid of the bias? And so, you know, I hope that might play a role in this as well. I don't know if that's going to happen in this polarized society, but that's part of my hope.
Sure. Well, there is, I mean, there's lots of polarization, right, and charges of, you know, fake news and all those things.
Right, so, yeah. Yeah, the whole fake news thing was happened after we'd done our research. So, you know, we don't put the term fake news in our book, but yeah, but now that's come up, and so it's become a very, very hot topic.
Yeah. Well, I think it just reminds us, too, that we need to be discerning as we read and consume media, right, that we are understanding maybe the framework of which is coming and compare it with what God's Word says ultimately.
Yeah, we always must be discerning. And part of my argument is, you know, our culture does have Christianophobia in it. So we have to really be discerning about our culture as well as find ways to change our culture rather than just getting involved in politics.
George, always good to talk with you. You doing any summer teaching, or are you just preparing for the fall semester already?
I do have one class that I'm teaching right now. It's an online class, so that makes it a little bit easier. And then my wife's having our third kid, so that's going to take the rest of my summer right there.
Well, congratulations. Good for you. And we'll wish you a early happy Father's Day.
Okay. Well, not too early, but okay. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Don't want to have our kid come too early. But yeah,
sure. Okay. George Yancey is professor of sociology at the University of North Texas and author of some 15 books focusing on racism and anti-religious hostility. I always appreciate chatting with you, George. Thanks for coming on the show today. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. You know, we're just a few minutes before wrapping up the show. Speaking of Father's Day coming up, Jim Gaffigan, the comedian, says, people ask what it's like to have four kids, and I just tell them, picture that you're drowning, and then someone hands you a baby. All right, we can wish you happy Father's Day early. All right, we'll wrap up the show in just a moment. Well, we're at 3 before the hour, so if you need to be work at the top of the hour, you got 3 minutes to go. We talked about work earlier this morning with Will Messenger, the Theology of Work, theologyofworkproject.org, and some good words about that. I was thinking about a verse in Proverbs 13 today, thinking about work. Lazy people want much but get little, but those who work hard will prosper and be satisfied. That's Proverbs 13, verse 4. Proverbs 13, verse 3 says, those who control their tongue will have a long life. A quick retort can ruin everything. So that's probably always good advice from Proverbs today. Thanks to Dr. David Stevens for joining us this hour, and George Yancey as well. And thank you for tuning into Faith Radio. Logan, you're not really a coffee drinker, really. I'm not either. The Brooklyn company that offers the world's strongest coffee is rebranding its packaging. Biohazard Coffee also redesigned its website.
Oh, no.
Yes. One cup of coffee packs a walloping 4 times the amount of caffeine normally found in a traditional brew. Over the course of the entire day, the Mayo Clinic only recommends half the amount of caffeine found in a single cup of Biohazard's coffee.
So. Sounds like the perfect thing for 5 days a week,
wow.
Couple cups every morning.
I would say, maybe just make a plan to listen to Colin Smith and Unlocking the Bible, and let that be your morning pick-me-up, followed by Jux Wendahl. You'll be better off all around, and you can hear Colin, of course, coming up in just a few minutes here on Faith Radio, and hope that you'll join us tomorrow. Peter Kapsner Reed stepping in tomorrow morning here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.